This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
PTB Wrestling Network, welcome back to the NWA Saturday Special. Hope you're all having a good weekend, or if it's Monday, start of the week, depending when you're listening. I am your co-host, Scott Criscolo, and sitting next to me, as always, for our weekend jaunt through history, or current, depending what's going on in the world, the doctor, Dr. G, George Robolino. You know what's really sad, Doctor, is that I feel like we haven't talked about current NWA in like 10 years.
I know this is
sucks.
Like crazy.
It sucks.
I'm ready for some real NWA wrestling. But you know what? This going back to the past has really been a lot of fun. And you know, just breaking down, you know, legends and breaking down the championship belts. You know, it's something that we probably wouldn't normally take time to do. So here we go. We're doing it and having a good time doing it at the same time. And
yes, we are.
We'll see how this one goes tonight. I think this one will be an interesting show tonight.
Well, tonight, of course, we are continuing our series. We're doing things in series now, Doctor and I. Everything's in like, it's like mini series, like, you know, The Winds of War or something like that. We did the Mount Rushmore. Back in, I guess it was June at some point, we did an episode called The Highs and Lows of Sweet Charlotte, which talked about the history of the NWA World's Heavyweight Championship. Last week, we had our good friend Drew Wardlaw on from You Don't Know Billy Jack. We talked about the history and legacy of the United States Heavyweight Championship. This week, we continue our series about the legacy of the NWA's championship titles by talking about what many consider the most beloved championship in the history of the National Wrestling Alliance. It's so beloved because the belt has returned to modern day. Of course, the U.S. title is currently occupied by World Wrestling Entertainment. It is currently held by Apollo Crews. And the belt looks nothing like any of the alliterations of the belt, or iterations, I'm not sure which word to use there, that we all loved. But this belt has been reactivated by the current National Wrestling Alliance, Mr. William Patrick Corgan. And it had a couple of champions, but sadly, it is now vacant. We'll get more into that later. The belt I'm, of course, talking about is good old Big Red, the NWA World Television Championship. Probably, Dr. G, one of the most beloved belts in Southern wrestling, if not all of the country in the history of wrestling. I think anytime anybody sees the belt with the red paint on it, the red accents and the red leather, it brings them back to better times. You know what I mean? As a wrestling fan.
I call it the Orange Championship.
It is. And we are going to talk about AA, among others, tonight. Because this is a belt. This is a different... The story of the World Television title is very different in terms of lineage than the U.S. title. I'm going to get into that tonight. I think it was a late bloomer in terms of belts for me compared to the other championships down in Crockett and Mid-Atlantic. But we're not doing it alone. Everybody, we always have someone to join us. Again, Drew Wardlaw joined us last week for the U.S. title discussion. This week, a return guest to the NWA Saturday Special. He is a frequent guest of other shows here on the PTB Wrestling Network. And now, he is a tri-host of a fine program on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, which, by the way, and I don't mind puffing my chest because I've done it all week, has surpassed 1 million downloads. in 9.5 years.
Yay.
Yay. Mr. Sean Kidd, the pride of Virginia.
How are you, Good Sean? Evening, guys. How you doing?
What's going on? Shawnee's one of my favorite people on the planet. How are you?
I'm great. We got to debut the pod this week, and we're getting ready to talk about what I consider the greatest NWA title of all time after you did my second favorite last week, so I'm pretty excited.
Oh, it's good to have you. Of course, Sean is talking about the debut pod of NWA Crock and Roll. I listened to it this week. It was absolutely tremendous. I wish I had as much love for David Crockett as you guys do. You did your best, but I still don't, but that's just me. Everything else about the, well, I mean, the show was great, period. I just still am not the biggest David Crockett fan, but that's just me. But the show was amazing. You two fine strapping young bucks. And no, not the Jackson brothers. They suck. I mean, you guys. And of course, Callum McDougal, tremendous job. And of course, Jambalaya Jake, your first guest, Jacob Williams. Great job, guys. Excellent show. NWA Crock and Roll once a month here on the podcast feed, going back to the Saturday night 6:05 show. And they made their start in April of 85, which was when Crockett bought Jim Barnett's Georgia promotion and took over the 6:05 slot. And you guys did April of 85, which was fantastic. And you're going to go monthly by month. So it's awesome. We'll talk more about the show at the end when we Absolutely. Do our plugs. But a great show and great maiden voyage, guys. You two and Callum did a fantastic job. Jacob's always a great guest. I know you'll have many good guests down the line.
Yeah. Thanks.
January of 86 hasn't been booked yet, huh?
Not
Interesting.
Yet.
Yeah. Something big happens in that month. We're going to talk about that down the line here in the Saturday special. Anyway, enough rumor and innuendo. Let's talk about the good old Red Belt, the NWA World Television Championship. Now, I had mentioned last week, and I know for a fact this time, Dr. G, that Florida did not have its own television title. A few promotions around the country did have their own. One of the ones that was actually quite prevalent in the South, besides Crockett's, Georgia, ironically, as they worked together, Georgia had a television title. I think it was called the National Television Championship. And there were some great feuds involving that belt. One of the ones I remember vividly, not as a kid, really. I remember reading about him in PWI. Tell me if you guys remember or not. Jake the Snake Roberts and Ronnie Garvin. Ronnie fucking Garvin. God, that guy's name's showing up everywhere in the last 72 hours. And it'll show up again later today on the feed. Ronnie Garvin and Jake Roberts had a great feud in, I think it was like 83, 84 down in Georgia for the Georgia TV title. Dr. G, do you remember watching? I know you watched Georgia as a kid because you got it in your neck of the woods. Do you remember that feud at all? Or do you remember anything about what the belt looked like or anything like that?
Little bit. I mean, I couldn't tell you what the title looked like. No, I have to be honest with you.
It's very colorful. It's like blue and green, and I found a good replica for like $100.
You know what? I think it's the one that looked like the logo that they used to stand front of. You know, like Gordon Solie used to, you know, from the set. I think. Yep. Okay. I kind of remember it.
Yeah. Now. Do you remember the belt, Sean?
I do not, because I was not watching it that time frame. I started watching the NWA in 86, so my lineage really goes back to Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, we didn't get Georgia up here in the Northeast. I only remember vaguely reading old PWIs that my brother got, because he's older than me, and he was a wrestling fan before I was. So he had bought PWIs in 82, 83, and The Wrestler and Inside Wrestling and all the cool mags. And I remember seeing pictures like a bloodied Ronnie Garvin in some cage match with Jake or whatever. And it kind of reminded me when I would read them later on when Jake was in the WWF in, you know, 86, 87 in his, you know, his main run. Other than that, I'm sure there was a TV title and other promotions around the country. But the one, of course, that was the most prevalent was in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling. And they had at the time when it premiered, it was the NWA Mid-Atlantic Television Championship. It made its debut on February 27th, 1974, at a tournament in Raleigh, North Carolina. Danny Miller defeated Ole Anderson in the final. I have no idea who the hell Danny Miller is.
Never heard of him.
He doesn't even have a link on Wiki. It tells you how important Danny Miller was. But he was the first Mid-Atlantic Television Champion.
And Ole did the job.
Yeah, how about that? Huh? Yep. Yeah. So the belt would change. Unlike the U.S. title, which had long reigns, the TV title never really did. You wouldn't see it have long reigns. Ivan Koloff and Paul Ivan Koloff beat Danny Miller in May of 74, and then he and Paul Jones would bounce the belt around throughout the rest of 74 until on February 8th, 1975, in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Just a scant, probably, 6 months before his plane crash. Not yet quite the Nature Boy, but Ric Flair would win the television title from Paul Jones on February 8th, 1975 in Winston-Salem. Paul Jones won it back. Then it was vacated because Paul Jones won the U.S. heavyweight title. So, of course, back then, two singles titles at once? Poo-poo to that idea. Then it would bounce around the next few years, again, for the next year or so. Guys like Angelo Mosca, Mr. Wrestling 1, Tim Woods, who I didn't think would wrestle again after the plane crash, but I guess he did. Greg Valentine, Rufus Jones, they'd bounce back and forth. Flair would win it back. Steamboat would win it. Ricky the Dragon. Baron Von Raschke actually won it. And when he won it in October of 77, the Mid-Atlantic was dropped, and that's when it was just called the NWA Television Championship. Not World, just Television Championship, as he won a tournament with all regional TV champions. He would bounce around through the rest of the 70s with Johnny Weaver. Paul Jones went back. Steamboat to be vacated. I'm buzzing through the 70s. I really want to get more into the 80s, guys. Roddy Piper won it at the dawn of 1980. Some guy I've never heard of, and I'm going to ask you, Dr. G, first, who this guy is. Have you ever heard of Sweet Ebony Diamond?
I can't say I have.
No. Shawnee?
I have not heard of him, but I do know who he is after looking it up.
No, I didn't either until I just clicked on it. Sweet Ebony Diamond, Dr. G, had a very famous father-in-law and a very famous – he would birth a famous future son. Sweet Ebony Diamond was the other name of Soul Man Rocky Johnson.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I did not, and I'll be honest, Shawnee's just like me. We're too honest for too. We're too cool for school. We just found out 10 seconds ago when I clicked on it on the.
We sure did.
Sure did. No idea, but yes, Sweet Rocky Johnson in Mid-Atlantic was Sweet Ebony Diamond, and he won the TV title in a tournament on April 29th, 1981. Piper vacated it after he won the U.S. title. That's twice now that's happened. Him and Greg Valentine would bounce it around in 81. Ron Bass would win it. Ivan Koloff would win it back. Jimmy Valiant would win it in 82. Joe LaDuke. Then that would be vacated because LaDuke was stripped of it. Bad Leroy Brown would win it, who, of course, would end up becoming one of the Zambui Express. Then a guy, Dr. G, you knew very well in your household, won it on Christmas Day 1982 in Charlotte. A gentleman by the name of Mike Rotundo.
Yep.
Would win the TV title. Now, if you remember at this point, guys, the TV title was very tiny. It was one of those little belts, kind of nondescript. But I felt like, well, we're going to go through the rest, and then I got a point to make, and I'm curious if you guys agree. Dick Slater would win it. Roddy Piper won it back. Slater, Joe LaDuke again, Kabuki. Charlie Brown would win it at the first Starrcade. Of course, we know Charlie Brown was stupid-ass Jimmy Valiant, his 97 aliases. Mark Youngblood then won it on March 7th, 1984 in a tournament after Jimmy Valiant had to drop the title. Now, before I get to the next guy, I feel like the TV title didn't have that prestige feeling that the U.S. title had. Like, even though both titles were pretty much regional in the 70s and early 80s, looking back now, guys, and watching shows back then, you know, watching shows now from back then, 81, 82, of course, on the WWE Network. Shawnee, I'll start with you. I feel like the TV title was much more regional and much smaller than the U.S. title, even though they were both strictly Mid-Atlantic. And I felt like the U.S. title, even though it was, yes, probably a notch above in the pecking order, still felt even bigger. And that the TV title was just kind of like a throwaway singles belt for like the curtain jerkers. Did you ever get that feeling when you were watching, as you've watched some of the older shows, that the TV title didn't get that kind of respect that the U.S. title did?
I did. And I think a great comparison to that would be, like, if you think about the U.S. title, like, go back to the 80s and the time frame. Think about Greg Valentine and Piper and their U.S. title match. That was a big fight feel. And, you know, I'm trying to recollect in my head, you know, we're watching, you know, we're watching this era now of 85. I'm trying to recollect prior to that, any main feud, anything prior to that that I can remember, like that U.S. title match with Valentine and Piper. And I can't get my head wrapped around it. So I think what you say is spot on, because I can't wrap my head around any of them that I can remember, like that match for the U.S. title.
Hmm. What are your thoughts, Dr. G, on what I was saying?
Well, I think the U.S. title, because it was always positioned as being the, you know, pretty much the number one contender to the World's Heavyweight Championship. That's why you're feeling, you know, you feel it was bigger. And you're right. I think the Mid-Atlantic belt, when it was Mid-Atlantic Television Championship, was more of like, I guess the U.S. title was kind of like main eventers, but, you know, they weren't, obviously you could only be in the main event if you were with the world champion. So you had to have somebody underneath to be the next person in line to face the champion. And probably the television title was more of a mid-card belt at the time.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, and you know, and then I felt the World Television Championship became, you know, kind of almost equal with the U.S. title, you know, I would say starting in like when they changed it to the NWA World Television title, then I felt like those belts were a little bit more equal at the time. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
But I think before that, I think it was just that it was positioned more as a maybe even, you know, low mid-card to maybe, you know, just regular mid-card belt kind of, you know, floating around there in Mid-Atlantic.
Right. Well, it also felt like that. Now, don't forget, not only did the NWA World's Heavyweight Champion, whoever, whether it was Harley or Dusty or Rick, predominantly in that region, but the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion, I feel like, was slotted underneath the U.S. title, but above the TV title. So the TV title was even lower in the pecking order than even if it was a single, because you actually had two top-tier championships. You had the NWA World's Heavyweight title, and you had the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight title. I know, obviously, one has, you know, one is clearly more superior to the other, but for argument purposes, because whoever the NWA champion was usually hung around in Crockett by the late 70s, early 80s, whether it was Harley, although Harley did spend a lot of time in St. Louis, Dusty, who obviously spent a lot of time, gee, in your backyard, and then Flair. But they all cruise through Crockett at some time or another. And the U.S. title, even if it was regional, still felt bigger than the Mid-Atlantic title. So that's just the way that I feel like it worked. So the TV title had a very regional and kind of small feel, and I feel like the champions were kind of that way too, until March 28th, 1984, in Spartanburg, South Carolina, where this guy defeated Mark Youngblood to begin a 353-day reign as television champion. And that guy is none other than Tully Blanchard. And I feel like at that moment, because of him, the television title finally took some shape. Now, it wouldn't be until 85 when the smaller kind of beat-up-looking belt would finally get retired and we'd get the delicious-looking red leather belt that would be the face of the TV title forever. But Dr. G, what are your thoughts on that page turner? Because I feel like Tully, then he would get Baby Doll. I feel like Tully
didn't bring it to another level, but I, the one thing I try to think about, you know, now as we're going through these things, do we think that he made it feel bigger because of what he wound up doing after that by becoming a horseman and becoming a part of that elite group? Or do we really feel at that time he brought the belt to another level because he was Tully Blanchard? Sometimes I fight with myself on that because I think we think of him as being with the Four Horsemen. Now, I do remember his reign, you know, because I was watching at that time. And, you know, he was very cocky and, you know, he was a great heel. But I think his legend becomes more prevalent because he became part of the Four Horsemen. And then I think he did have a reign Or was no? Was he? Did he ever reign when he was with the Horsemen as TV champion?
No, yeah. he was national heavyweight champion for most of the Horsemen run. Arn was mostly the TV champion during the Horsemen run. He might have had it, but by 87, him and Arn were mostly in tag. Arn and Tully were mostly the tag champions.
Sean, do you remember?
He had a later title run, which we'll probably talk about a little later. So here's my take on what you guys are saying about Tully. So when he won the belt, they were still in the Georgia Championship Wrestling phase. So a little sneak peek under the tent here. We're going to see the debut of the TV title we all know and love in the May edition of the Crack and Roll episodes. Yeah. And I feel like someone else kind of raises the bar on it, and Tully in turn raises the bar on himself and becomes a part of the schematic of what the TV title becomes. So did Tully, when he first got it in this time period, did he really elevate it? I don't know if I can say he did, but I will tell you later on down the road, I absolutely feel he did.
So you're thinking like I am, where I think we think he, because we know what he wound up becoming and what he wound up doing. So, of course, we're looking back on history and we think that. But I think if you had to go back to that time, I wouldn't say he totally elevated it at that point. Again, later on, obviously.
In 84, I would say no. But I do think pre-Horseman, he does. But that's a little sneak peek under the tent of what you guys will see in May. So,
exactly, yes.
Now, do you agree, Scott, or do you think that he elevated?
You know what? You guys actually bring up a good point, because I just watched. I'm in the middle of one of my Chrono watches on the network. I'm watching Crockett. I'm a little bit ahead of you guys on your timeline. I'm in July. I know you guys started in April, but we're, in terms of the belts, we're kind of in the same place. Although that July at the Great American Bash, Tully would lose the TV title to the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And then the belt, I think Sean's alluding to, the belt definitely gets that feel because now the Dream's got it. Yeah. And, Tully would win it later on down the line. He would win it back about a year later, but yep. We'll get there. Then he'd get stripped of it because he was TV champion. During the venomous attack by the cousins, Arn, Ole, and Rick in the cage in Atlanta, one of the greatest heel beatdowns in the history of heel beatdowns. I mean that 9 minutes in that cage is so luscious, it's amazing. But we'll talk about it here in the future on the special. I know you guys obviously will get to it as well. And then in January of '86, the guy many consider the face of the TV title won it. On January 4th, 1986, in a tournament, which I think was a real tournament, actually. I don't think this was one of those Rio de Janeiro ones. It was a real tournament.
It was.
And we are talking, of course, about the enforcer, AA, Arn Anderson. And when AA won it, Sean, then I think maybe you're right. I think you're right. Yeah, I think as we dawned of 86, I think that's when the red leather shined brightest.
Absolutely. So like I said, coming up in May, we're going to see the debut on our pod. We'll see the debut. We'll walk everyone through the debut of the new TV title. And Dusty really does something with it. And then him and Tully trade it back and forth. And then I'm really looking. So here's what I'm really looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to getting to this Arn time frame, because I started watching in the summer of 86. So the Arn TV title reign is something I'm not 100% familiar with in terms of that time frame. So I'm really looking forward to that, because I am a huge Arn Anderson fan, and I cannot wait to watch that time period, because I think you're right. I think, for me, I think Tully Blanchard and Dusty are synonymous with that title. I'm looking forward to seeing the Arn title reign, so I could see it the way you're seeing it too. So,
Yeah, you'll definitely pick up on that. And Scott, the NWA World Television Championship was named, the official name was during Dusty Rhodes' reign.
Yes, October. Let me get the official date. The official date that the word "world" was added in officially. Somewhere between March and April of 85. So during Dusty's first run,
I think it was May 1st, 1985, because it's on our very first watch on the next episode.
Fantastic.
Crockett. So
fantastic. All right. So the word world was added in May of 85. For more details on that, check out the August episode of it. Well, you can't check it yet because it hasn't been done yet. but it will happen. So throughout 86, Arn holds it for a hunk. Dusty wins it back. And then Tully wins it. And then in August of 87, and this is a big deal, guys, Nikita Koloff wins the title. And then at Starrcade, after the second, you know, a lot of people break Vince's balls about sucking up all these territories. Crockett bought two territories in 2 years. Mm-hmm. He bought Georgia in 85, and then he bought the UWF, which of course was the former Mid-South, in 87. And at Starrcade 87, Nikita, the Crockett's TV champion, defeated Terry Taylor, who was UWF / Old Mid-South TV champion, and swallowed up another TV.
You know,
title.
And they criticized Vince, too, about like destroying WCW, but for the most part, Crockett did the same thing with UWF.
Right? Yeah.
He made his guys go over.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah. You look at that Starrcade 87, I think the only guy, you look at that Starrcade 87, I think the only UWF guy that had any, let me look at the card real quick. Yeah, if you look at a guy, the only guy who pretty much looked good.
Dr. Death.
Yeah, and Sting.
Sting, yep.
Pretty much it. Because, I mean, by then, UWF was kind of a shell of its former self. It wasn't like, you know, Duggan was gone. You know, Hacksaw was in the WWF. Little note on Hacksaw Jim Duggan at the end of our program. you know, a lot of the other big pieces that were, I mean, JYD was already in the WWF. Orndorff was in the WWF. So a lot of the guys that were really the backbone of Mid-South in 82, 83, 84, fucking Butch Reed, like all those guys were already off to New York, as they say.
Yeah, I vividly remember that Nikita win in August because it was on, I can't remember if it was on Pro or Worldwide, but I remember watching it that Saturday morning it aired, and I could not believe Nikita had won it. I thought it was the greatest thing of all time at the time. So it was really cool to see it on live TV, and they had a really hell of a good match too. So,
yeah, and Nikita was a babyface. That, of course, happened. That was a hair trigger move after, of course, the car accident that pretty much ended the career of Magnum TA. They had to turn Nikita face fairly
quickly. I remember how big that was at the time when they made Nikita a face because, you know, face and heel turns didn't happen as much as it does today at that time. So, and to have somebody that was so hated turn, you know, that, you know, you know that feeling when a person that's so hated and when they turn face, they're like so popular. It's amazing. You know, I think of that during the 80s, you know, with Paul Orndorff when he turned face and when Macho Man Randy Savage turned face, the fans were like, would go nuts for them because
exactly. They
were such good heels that to see them turn the other cheek and come on the side of the good guys, you know, the fans really loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think it was a smart, and I know we're getting off track again like we always do, but it was a very smart booking decision by one, Mr. Rhodes, really quick pivot and shift after the Magnum accident, and I think the people ate it up, as you know. So I think it was very, very smart that they did that.
Definitely.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I feel like now at this point, the TV title has definitely got major prestige. We saw more title shots at that time than we did maybe even the U.S. title. Then by 1988... Until 1993, the NWA / WCW would take over because, of course, Ted would buy Crockett in November of 88. While Mike Rotunda won the title back for the first time in many years when he beat Nikita at a live event in Raleigh. I think he was a heel at that time. I think he had joined the varsity club at that point.
Six years, he had a nice reign.
Yeah.
He had a great reign, and it's funny it's amazing to me that Mike Rotunda is our last official Crockett-era TV champion. That's very cool.
It is very cool, yes.
Yeah.
335 days as champion.
Yep.
Then he would lose it to his former varsity club running buddy Rick Steiner at Starrcade 88. And then Rotunda would win it back at Chi-Town Rumble. Then Sting would win it, and then
I think that's one faction, Scott and Sean, that I think doesn't get the respect it deserves. The Varsity Club was a really good faction.
Dr. G, I agree with you. So I remember that whole angle vividly because Rotunda was the Florida heavyweight champion and he started appearing on TV. And then when he joined Sullivan and he beat Makita, that was probably one of the biggest upsets up to that point that I had ever seen on NWA television, because I just looked at him as kind of a regional champion, and it totally changed Mike Rotunda for the better as far as his future, I think. So it was shocking.
It wasn't. But that faction, I mean, they put together with Sullivan, and it's just it really worked. I love the whole Varsity Club idea, and you know, it was just something different. It was different from all the other factions, which made it, you know, was unique.
And very different for Sullivan, right?
Yep. Exactly. Because I grew up watching Kevin Sullivan, yep, that scary bastard, when I was a kid.
Now he's a Letterman.
Yeah, to see him with them was just, it was strange. It was almost like the Odd Couple going on there. But it was, I thought it was a really, really good faction. And, you know, I think Mike Rotunda is one of those underrated NWA World Television Champions.
I agree. Let me tell you one match that blew me away, and I'm sorry. I love the TV title, but there was a syndicated show that Mike Rotunda defended his TV title against Barry Windham. And I marked out so big because all I could think about was, holy shit, these guys held the WWF tag team titles, and now I'm seeing them fight for the TV title. I thought that was the coolest thing ever. So there's so many great matches, but that one for me sticks out because of just the fact that they were both champions in the WWF, and here they are. And that's before I even knew they were related or anything. I just thought that was so cool.
It was.
Yes, and we will be doing, because again, as long as William Patrick is continuing to restructure and get things ready for the revival, or the return, I shouldn't say revival because he revived it, the return of the current National Wrestling Alliance, we will be doing a series on factions. we know who will be involved in that discussion. But anyway, and the Varsity Club will be one of them. But yeah, I definitely feel like over the last half of the 80s, the TV title had just as much cred, if not more cred. I can't believe I'm saying this because I'm almost dogging my own favorite belt, the U.S. title, because I feel like the U.S. title didn't really, at least for those couple of years, didn't have the exposure, because it wasn't involved in any horseman feuds until Luger got, well, I guess Barry had it. But I feel like the TV title next to Flair with the world title was like the belt you saw the most.
Well, you know, when Dusty had it, you know, I feel when Dusty became world television champion, that's when the belt got elevated, when they added that world in front of it. And it did, it did to me at that time, it did feel just as not popular, but just as, it meant just as much as the U.S. title in terms of.
Well, and it was on every week, right? And here's the other thing that I really like about the TV title. So at the time they debuted it, I always felt the Magnum TA U.S. title before they debuted the new one was very plain and bland, but that TV title popped out. And I'm part of it, I think the design of that belt and the way it looked actually might have superseded how I felt about the U.S. title, because I thought the U.S. title design was so lame until they did the new one. So I think there's a lot of factors that go into it.
Yeah, the U.S. You know what's funny, Sean? Because the TV title lasted a lot. The TV title was kind of a dummy down version of the 10 pounds of gold. It had the kind of the rectangular look with the circle in the middle, just kind of more worn out and beat up than the world title, obviously. So the TV title, which was this little one of those little tiny old school Crockett belts, got upgraded. What, a year in it? Well. Yeah, but a year and a half before the TV title, or the U.S. title, be upgraded to the gold, and you know, the one that's the three of us love. So yeah, I agree with you. I think this is a case where belt design made a huge difference, because that, if you're, when you look at Tully in '85 and Dusty when that red belt just it pops, and One thing I have to say, and I don't criticize Ric Flair often, but he, until the Big Gold Belt made its debut, I feel like he never really showed the belt on camera much. It's like he used to hold it like a textbook.
Yes.
Whereas when Tully and Dusty were the TV champion and that red belt debuted, I mean, that thing shined like crazy.
It did.
And it popped on the camera. So it's not just the U.S. title. I think above anything else, like even the tag belts had that kind of colorless look that I like now.
That's the thing. Like the national tag titles, like Arn and, like I'm watching Arn and Oli right now. They're so great. But again, the national tag titles are just so blah, right, in terms of design. And then what I really remember is the United States tag team titles because, again, they were different, just like the TV title. And that's way down the line. But I really think belt design, depending on what era you're walking and watching in Crockett, makes all the difference in the world of how you see a prestigious title. I really do.
I do agree with you on that because I remember as a kid I always wanted certain belts. You know, now, you know, kid, you know, we could all get them, but at the time it was like, and I remember, you know, when we used to have our little backyard wrestling federation as a kid, we used to make our own belts, you know, out of paper and all that, just to try to replicate how it looked on television. And, you know, obviously when they introduced the big gold belt, that, you know, that was massive. That looked like a world title. And then the you know, the World Television Championship, the one that we like, you know, with the red leather, it was something that popped and it made you feel, wow, that's big, you know. But when you have those bland belts, like, to me, you're right, when Magnum held the U.S. title, it was kind of a bland belt. It didn't look like an important belt.
Tag titles were the same thing until the Andersons made the belt. The belt did not make them because it was ugly. The belts were ugly, in my opinion.
I agree. I
also want to make one more, and Scott, I'm sorry, I want to make one more point about
go ahead.
About Arn Anderson. So you bring up Arn Anderson being the greatest TV champion of all time, and he is, but you know why? His reigns, for me, late 80s into the 90s, that's where Arn Anderson becomes the TV champion, the greatest TV champion to me. I don't necessarily know if during the Crockett era we got a taste of that. I feel like after the Crockett era is really when he took off because he had multiple title reigns, and he predominantly held that title through the mid-90s, late 80s to the mid-90s. So I think he is the greatest of all time, but I also think it was in a different era. So maybe that's why I feel differently about it.
I don't disagree with that point, but I definitely, and I agree with both you guys, that I never really thought about it until I'm watching shows now that Flair, I mean, when the big gold belt would debut, you know, in 86, Flair put that sucker front and center on camera. First of all, it was big, it was shiny, it was gorgeous. But before that, you know, the TV title was the prettiest looking belt of the 100%. Bunch,
yep.
Which is crazy. The third belt in the pecking order was the best looking for like 2 years until, because the big gold belt and the awesome U.S. title belt almost debuted roughly at the same time because, the show that we talked about on. If you're listening to this on Saturday, later today, on the newest episode of Jenny and the Gems, was February of 86, and Flair still had the 10 pounds of gold. So, see, I thought that the big gold belt debuted right at the start of the year. It didn't. It debuted kind of in the late winter, early spring of 86. So, I mean, honestly, you're right. For like a good year, the TV title was the prettiest and most elegant-looking belt, for lack of a better word, in the company.
Yeah.
So,
and I will give you a sneak peek. So you bring up how it's prestigious and how it looks, and like in the next, again, a little sneak peek in one of the episodes we watch next month, Dusty, right after he gets that new title in his first interview segment with Shivani and Crockett, that TV title sitting right up on that interview stand, right face center, and is the most beautiful thing you ever see.
Yep. Yeah. Crockett needed to spend some money on belts faster.
He sure did. That TV title definitely ran the gamut at the time.
Now speaking of Arn, and I heard this somewhere, and I don't know if it was another podcast I was listening to, but Arn Anderson won all his TV championships in January.
He did. That is correct.
That's funky.
Isn't that weird?
I think it was on one of his podcasts, actually.
It might have been. Yeah. It's like they're all like within a week of each other, like the dates. It's really strange.
January 4th, 86. January 2nd, 90. January 7th, 91. The January 8th, 95. That's fucked up.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. Happy New Year, Double A.
January was a good month.
You know, like more and more that I listen, I do listen to his podcast, and just now going back and look at stuff, I just guess I didn't realize how good Arn was. I think sometimes you got to go back and watch things to realize, you know, really, you know, what a good hand he was in the ring. I mean, he really, he deserves any praise that he gets because he's just top. He was good on the stick. He was good wrestler. You could put him in there with just about anyone and he would, you know, give a good match. And, you know, he just, I think he had it all. I think that if in today's wrestling, if there was an Arn Anderson around, he could be world champion. I really believe that.
He was the perfect, like, if you wanted to have a model of what a TV champion should look like, it was definitely Arn Anderson for sure.
Yep. Just like Drew Wardlaw says, Lex Luger was the face of the U.S. title.
Drew's actually not wrong about that. I kind of tend to agree with him.
Yeah, well, he had a 600-day reign with it. I don't disagree either. Although, you know, he's just happy because he got to watch Lex Luger, his two favorite guys, Lex Luger and Stan Hansen, wrestle each other for the U.S. title. But
again, post-Crockett era, you can't argue that Luger was the guy. You can't argue that.
It's true. And Double A was the face of the TV title. We'll stop there. We want to get into the 90s because that's not what we do here in the Saturday special. That's WCW. That's another day. Yep. The Talking WCW clan, Jenny, Tim, and Greg could talk about somebody that had the TV title in the 90s because it bounced around like a ton in the 90s. A ton. Yep. much more than the U.S. title did. So there it is. The legacy of one of the most beloved championships in the history of wrestling, the NWA World Television Championship. And at the moment, in the current day NWA, the TV title is vacant because on June 25th, the TV champion, Zicky Dice, asked for his release. So I don't know why, because he sucks and won't work anywhere else. Although Dr. G liked his pink t-shirt. And so right now the TV title is vacant. Remember, it was rejuvenated at Hard Times, the pay-per-view back in January. Ricky Starks, who's now in AEW, won the tournament. And then in March, he lost the title to Zicky Dice in June. So the title is now vacant. So when the NWA reboots, the TV title will obviously have another tournament and we'll find a new television champion. Sean Kidd, let's talk a moment as we are at the tail end here. Let's talk a little bit about the new endeavor that is here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network, NWA Croc and Roll. Tell everybody a little bit about the genesis of this fine program and how it got started.
Well, the genesis is pretty simple. So it goes all the way back to when I first started listening to the PTBN family. I obviously listened to you and Justin, and then where the big boys play was one of my favorites. And when it went away, it totally, you know, I was very upset. But so anyway, that went away. But that was one of my favorites. And especially when they were talking about the Crockett era stuff. But then you guys started the Saturday special on the new NWA, and then you started evolving into your Mount Rushmore and talking about the old stuff, and it really started getting my juices flowing. So I just started to think, okay, so we need a podcast for Crockett Era. And I know there's random pods out there that probably cover that, Mid-Atlantic Pod and all these other pods, but I wanted to do a different spin on it. So I decided to look at it and go, okay, so what if we did monthly and looked at the Saturday night shows starting with the Crockett Era when it officially started? So that's kind of the genesis of it. And then, you know, I kind of threw it out to you and said, hey, I have an idea. And, you know, it just spun from there. And then, you know, we got Dr. G, who's definitely a pretty big fan and expert in Crockett. And then Callum McDougall, you know, after I heard him on the Harley Race show, I wanted to get him on. And then we decided to have a fourth guest. And probably what we'll end up calling it is the rotating fourth horseman. So that's kind of how it started. So.
And definitely check out the first episode, which dropped earlier this week, where you guys
a lot of fun.
It was. The chemistry was immediate between you guys. And the first episode goes through April of 1985, which is the first month of Saturday night shows after Crockett bought Georgia. And I remember one of the first shows that was on WWE 24/7 back in 2005 when JR and I were doing our 7 million dubs was that episode where Ole Anderson gets into Thunderbolt Patterson's face. I remember that very, very well.
So great. That opening promo, like right out of the gate, hooked me right in and I never looked back.
Yep. It's absolutely. So no, it is absolutely great. So we definitely would like to think, we'd like to hope that that will be our NWA history pod here on the Place to Be Wrestling Network. And eventually the Doctor and I here on the Saturday special, we'll get back to talking, you know, some NWA powers and Carney Land and, you know, Nick Aldis and Marty Scurll.
We'll give you a little sneak peek for May. So a lot. So in May, we get two brand new champions, right? So, and then also in May, we get a pretty hot feud that started at the end. I'm sure a lot of you have heard about Dusty's Gorilla. So, and on top of that, the month of May, the other thing we're going to start doing is I'm going to start handpicking some matches from pro and worldwide wrestling for us to watch. And we have one hell of a television championship match to watch in May. So there's a lot of good stuff in May. It's a jam-packed show for our next pod. So hopefully you guys will check that out when it comes up. But definitely check out episode one. It's very, I personally am very proud of it and a lot of good content in it. So
it was amazing. No, it was absolutely amazing. Doubt. So, yep, once a month. I don't know if you guys could do more than that with all of the homework that Teacher Sean passes out to all of you. So,
Well, you know, it almost have to be a two part for like if you're gonna do it more than once a month, you're gonna have to do a two part of 1 month every month.
Exactly.
I know, right?
Yeah.
So
the professor. That's what we're gonna call you, the nickname. We're gonna call you the professor.
Professor. No, because
there's only one professor.
And we don't want to see Sean purse his lips like professor. So, Sean, always a pleasure. You can find him there. He's been a guest on Highway to the Impact Zone. That also dropped this week, the fourth episode of that tremendous show.
Yep.
With Logan Crosland and the gang as they go through the TNA era starting when Impact became a weekly show. And there are four episodes in, and all four episodes have been fantastic. So, but I just want to take a minute before we wrap up to talk a little bit about, and we're going to get more into it on this coming week's episode of the Place B podcast. JR and I will be doing the 1991 Royal Rumble this week. And we'll get more into it with him. But when I got the email from Podbean on Tuesday, that said that we had topped 1 million downloads. Now, mind you, this is just Podbean. This doesn't take Apple Music or Spotify or Stitcher or any of those other into account. So we might have hit a million a while ago. But this was just for a million for Podbean. I was taken aback for a minute because, you know, the days of a show getting like 1,500 downloads are over. Like, that doesn't happen. The market is so saturated now. Except for, like, you know, all of Conrad's shows. But he doesn't count. So, I mean, I remember when we did Place B podcast, and that was pretty much it. We did that for what, 3 years. And then beginning of 2014, JR started working with Kevin Kelly for the Kevin Kelly Show. I started Main Event, and Main Event's been continuing on. And then just it created this fan base that became a community, that became a family. And I'm very proud, not only of that statistic, but of the fact that I've done my best, and JR too, when he was here, when we were doing it together. Of course, he is now over on the other side of the quad with the very successful no-so feed, to cultivate talent. And Shawnee, you are one of them, and I would have never thought you'd do your own show, and here you are, and it's pretty damn awesome. I'm proud of my three mates from the other side of the pond, Callum, Rory, and Ben, who of course are the tri-hosts of the Special Relations Pod. Two of those three guys have their own show. Of course, Rory does. Well, now Callum does three. Now I technically all three of them do because Callum's a host. So Callum does Crock and Roll. Of course, Rory does Senior Video, where they watch an old Coliseum home video release. And Ben Locke, of course, does Chicken Salad. Which is a very funny show. I think Dr. G needs to be on a chicken salad because he loves watching crap wrestling. So, but and that is where I'm the most proud. It's not even just the content; it's the fact that I've created, that I've helped build such a wonderful family of fans. And we make fun of each other, and we talk about our you know, my hatred, my dislike of guys, and my love of Triple H, and all the shit that goes with it, and yada yada yada. But whatever, it is what it is. But that's just that feeling of knowing that a million downloads of all of the shows that are still on now, and the shows that are no longer on the air, the Clotheslines and Headlines and Dangerous Alliance Pod and all the other great positive that started well, and then unfortunately for one reason or another are not on anymore, but the archive is there, and they're great shows still to listen to. TJ McClune and some of the other amazing shows that have gone through the years here at the network. And I'm very proud of that. And I not only thank you guys, but I thank you, the listener, because if it wasn't for you downloading it, we'd be talking to the fan or the Chromebook and nobody be listening on the other end. And that means the world to me. For somebody who was in the radio business for 11 years, and Dr. G was in the radio business for a short time, I was kind of lost without my hobby, without my passion. You know, what I do in my job is nice, but it's not this. Because I do this well. There's not a lot of things I do very well. Talking for long periods of time, I do very well, as Dr. G can attest to. And sadly, I don't get paid for it anymore. But I do get paid for it with appreciation and respect, and that's earned. That's not taken. That's not stolen. And again, I want to thank you, the listener. I want to thank you, Sean, and all of the great talent on this network that has created such wonderful art. For those listening. So I just wanted to make that point clear. And again, JR and I will get more into it because him and I haven't really talked about it live, obviously, since it happened. But of course, there will be a new episode of the Place to Be podcast this week. So having said that, Dr. G, we'll be back next week. We will conclude our series on titles next week. Not sure who we'll have as a guest. We'll find somebody. The legacy of the NWA World Tag Team Championships. And boy, are there some damn awesome tag teams we could talk about. We will do that next week.
Yep. And congratulations to you and the gang at Place to Be Nation for the 1 million downloads.
Well, you participated in that. You participated in that.
It's kind of like you said, though. It's like, you know, for me, like someone like me, you know, I've been listening to you guys for many, many, many years, and the fact that I'm doing a podcast, and when I heard you guys for the first time, I'm like, man, that would be so cool to do, and now I get to do something like that. The only reason I can do something like that is because of what you guys have created. So kudos to you and Justin for what you've created. Like you said, not just for the pods, but for the family and community you've created. It's pretty incredible, and, you know, it'd be great if more people knew about it. One day they will, but a million downloads is great because you guys did an awesome job with it. So
Thank you. It means a lot. And, stay on the ride, guys, because more fun to come. And you listeners, stay with us because the ride's not over. Let's get to 2 million downloads in 10 years. Hopefully I'm still alive. Anyway, for us old farts. Sean Kidd, always a pleasure, brother. You'll be back soon. Check out NWA Croc and Roll. Episode 1 is in the books. Check it out on the feed. Episode 2 coming up in mid-August. Usually, because Dr. G likes to be specific about scheduling, he likes mentioning the day. He's Mr. Public Relations. Usually Croc and Roll is going to drop like the third Wednesday of the month, something like that. Second or third Wednesday of the month. It'll be a Wednesday.
Well you know, I'm putting out the challenge for the 6-man title. Main event versus the Croc and Roll.
Oh, God. Is Callum going to wrestle like Les Thatcher? He's going to like try to stretch us.
Callum, you know, William Regal, you know, he's
Blackpool.
we had this discussion. We have chicken salad involved. That'd have to do a heel turn, I think. And so I think Callum would have to. I mean, poor Ben, or poor Ben would eat it, I guess.
That's great. Check it out. End up with Croc and Roll. Tremendous show on the pod. Thanks for listening, everyone. Again, join us next week on the Saturday special. We'll talk about the legacy of the NWA World Tag Team titles. Sean Cave, the doctor. You are not.